Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 29 of Dogcast Radio. In today's programme, we bring you an interview with a remarkable dog trainer. How many dogs do you think you could control simultaneously? One? Two? Three? Well, Graham Sims works up to 8 dogs at the same time. We were lucky enough to attend one of his displays, and the relationship between him and his dogs is beautiful to witness. Border Collies came into Graham's life just when he was at a very low ebb and helped him find his way. Graham has a wealth of experience, some invaluable insights into the dog's mind, and plenty of humour. As is apparent from this interview, he is not only a great dog trainer, but also a great character.
You haven't always worked with dogs. You know, take us back to the start of the journey. What happened? How did you...
The real start is when I was about 8, and my mother said, after a great deal of duress, you can have a dog. And when I was at school one day, it barked. So she let it out. And it ran round to my grandmother's, and when I got there, there was a flattened pelt on the floor, because it was going to try to cross the road to get to see me at school. Well, that's an accident, so I didn't say too much about that. But when I got home, I said to my mother, why did you do that? And she said, well, it's only a dog. And that changed my whole way of thinking. I never thought the same after that. So when I started off as a designer, then a writer, then a painter, then a television man, so I did them all. And I ended up as a creative director in a big advertising agency. And the creative director is the one that not necessarily has the idea, though he does lots of times, but sets the expectation. It's going to look like this, it's going to cost that, it's going to be delivered on time, you know, all those ramrod things. But it's a typical job where you get promoted beyond your competence. And really, I would have been happy if I stayed a writer and an art director, but there you go. But I didn't get as much money. And then, because the advertising agency depends on skillfully told lies, and I was beginning to reform, I think, I was getting fed up with the lies, so... decided to start an advertising agency where it would be done honestly, because it does work. The strongest weapon in advertising is truth. But that turned out to be every bit as crooked as everybody else's advertising agency in the end, and my partner ran away with all the money. And so overnight we went from being well off to being poverty stricken, and worse, no prospects of jobs. At 50, nobody wants you, and an advertising man at 50 is, you know, Rip Van Winkle. Yeah. Time to go home, time to die, time to be buried. So I was really despairing, and I decided to go to the pub and get smashed. And I'm not a pub person, I'm not a get smashed person, so it's fairly unusual. Because I was fighting with my conscience, I didn't go out to the pub till 10:15, figuring that I'd whack them down so fast that then I could sleep and I wouldn't be upset. And right in the middle of the road was Black and White Dog, and that's how it all started. And I called her. Three options, really. Grab her before the truck killed her and me, grab her before the car on the other side killed her or me, or call her. And what do you call a dog you don't know? So we called her Annie, or for Nanny, I don't know. And she came, and the truck just missed her. And I went indoors and said to my wife, look what I found on the road. And she said, well, call her Annie. And it was kind of strange. And then, because we were poor then, really poor, and because we were ashamed... because everybody said, well, you know, imagine what they said. Your enemies said nasty things, and even the people that are allegedly your friends were kind of pleased to see you fall over. People are pleased to see somebody else fall over. So we figured we'd go down to the West Country where nobody knew us and start all over again and with no expectations. So if somebody said, do you want a job mucking out the cows? You could say, not looking at your CV, yes, please. It was that kind of job. And I trained her and trained her and trained her. When we got down there, we saw a big sign by the side of the road that said, sheepdog trials, entries on the field. And I asked the man what he'd do, and I noticed there were hundreds of black and white dogs just like mine. That was the first time I realised it really was what they said it was, sheepdog. I wasn't sure. I knew so little about them, they got a pink bit on their nose, and I thought the fur had worn out, and I'll show you how bad mine was. And the dog won everything in sight. And people offered me jobs, right? Loads of jobs. You know, the first jobs I took, which were pulling sheep from difficult places, Exmoor, edge of the cliffs, hilly ground that a 4x4 or a quad would find really difficult. And you asked me earlier when we were talking why you had more dogs, and the reason for having more dogs, two reasons. One, because I like more dogs. The reason I had so many dogs is because I like dogs. And when you've trained one, it's like a picture. If you're painting a picture, the journey is better than the arrival. And training dogs is better than when you train the dog, he's trained, you know. So you think, oh, I better have another one to complement that one. So the second reason was that over hilly country, a dog gets tired. And if you could work six, you could work a longer day and let some sleep in the back of your truck while you sent two fresh ones out to do the next job. And then you started behaving like a football manager, saying, this team tackles well, where's my toughest dog? I need a winger, I need an attacker, I need a steady dog. So you had this choice of dogs. And that's how it started. And then I went around in huge circles doing all these jobs, and then got a job at the theme park, worked for them for about 5 years. And then another theme park headhunted me at 4 times the salary. Plus all the profits made on this, that, the other, the other, the other. So suddenly we were earning as much money from doing the dogs as we did in the advertising industry. And one of the jobs in that theme park was managing a thing called the North Devon Sheepdog Training and Breeding Centre. And we trained loads and loads of sheepdogs, other people's sheepdogs, but other people with, everything. Labradors, Alsatians, Poodles, and Salukis and whatever, they all came and said, can you put mine right? So in the end, we were doing, like the man that came to me and said, here's my sheepdog. He said, would you train it? I said, yes. I said, is there anything wrong with it? Anything weak? He said, yes, he's frightened of sheep. So it's that kind of problem. and we discovered that dog was only frightened of sheep if it worked closer than 7 yards. And that took 8 weeks to discover. And he was nagging all the time, have you started? Have you started? And I said, no, I'm thinking. And he said, I'm not paying you to think, that kind of thing. But once I found out it wouldn't work any closer than that, all we did was tie knots on a piece of rope, tie it to the back of the sheep, and teach him to work outside the last knot. And by the time he finished, he was a great dog.
Yeah.
Did tell the owner, if you're going for a trial, never push him up against the sheep because he'll run away screaming, because they never overcome their fear. They merely learn to accommodate it.
Yeah.
Is that a good answer?
Yes, excellent.
Can I go home now?
No, not yet.
So
you've said why you work your so many dogs,
yeah.
For practical reasons.
Yeah.
But you have a special way of communicating and letting each dog know which dog you're asking to do something.
Yes, you could do it another way. A friend of mine who was a New Zealand shepherd used to say the dog's name first. Ben, turn left. Jack, turn right, or come by and away to me. And there was a kind of delay. Though it worked when you're close to them, it didn't work until 3 miles away. Mm-hmm. So he used to fall down there. And he also, out of consideration for the dog, would turn the instruction round when it was coming towards him. So that it was an opposite. And I figured the dog was bright enough not to need that. So if they're 3 miles away and you start with body language and you start with a word, come by, which is clockwise, and then you've got to have a whistle for clockwise when they're 3 miles away, it's much easier to give every dog its own whistle because it understands it. And then you realise, well, it's much easier to give a dog its own language. So what you do is you take one dog A out on Monday morning and you talk to him in German. You ascertain which language they like first. Bitches like soft languages, Si Schlimmack, Schlimmack, Clay, Daz, or French. Boys like Zur mich kommen Sie hier und schnell, danke, you know, that kind of thing. They like it to be precise. Not all boys. If they've been castrated, then you soften it. You still say Zur mich, but you don't, instead of saying Zur mich kommen Sie hier, you say Zur mich kommen Sie hier, and that works. So I take them out in the field all on their own and try the language. Once I got the language, I'd work that dog all on its own for 2 years, maybe 2 years. And then only when he understood all of his commands, put him in the ring with all the others that all understood other commands. So when you said Zur mich, the dog that hadn't been doing it would look at you in amazement, and the dog that had been doing it would do exactly what you asked it to do. Over a period of years, every dog understands all the other dog's languages. I mean, Polly in the other room understands 9 languages. Bob understood more than that, far more than that. But they, even though they understand them, they get kind of wise, and you see them saying, well, I understand this, but it's not for me. So they know. And they're so good that if you called out to the German dog, Zur mich kommen Sie hier, but you didn't actually call it the German dog, you called it the Welsh dog.
Yeah.
The Welsh dog, I've even seen nudge the German dog. That's fairly clever. Or if you're in a big show and they know they don't know whether you're going to make a fool of yourself, but they adapt. So you say, Ben, come here, in German. And it's not Ben you want at all, it's Jack. So Jack sort of looks at Ben, and Jack comes, even though he didn't call him. And as you've explained who the dogs were, that's really useful. So, no, it's the best way. And there's another thing, too. I noticed that we went to Ruthin, where the Welsh National Sheepdog Trials are on, and lots of the shepherds speak naturally two languages, Welsh and English. So what they do is the dog on the left, they speak to him Welsh, and the dog on the right, English. Mm. So I thought that was extendable.
Yes.
So you just keep adding languages. And people say, oh, do you speak the languages? And, well, you don't need to. You only need to speak one word ahead of your dog. So, you know, when you get to, what do I say for take your time? You ring up a Welsh friend and say, how do you take your time? And they say, ar y deg. You say, thank you. Write it down phonetically and off you go. Ar y deg, ar y deg. So I do speak German and I do speak Arabic. But the other languages, I don't. And I was introducing a choir last week, and I said, I thought I must have some words. Lambai, Pukwin, Gogelith, Wendell, you know that one. And Aradeg, Kelifarath, Deltral, Duravor, and so forth. And the man behind me in the choir said, where's the dog then, boy? So I couldn't speak in Welsh. Cariad Vach, little darling, is beautiful. It's a beautiful language, and it suits sheepdogs. And I noticed I was being trained in Wales, by a lady called Anna Lou Daybell. When I was being trained there, she used to make us go in head-to-head with the Welsh Hill Shepherds. And that's like an amateur being asked to run against, you know, the finest sprinter in the world. They're in a league of their own. And I noticed half of what they achieved was because of this lovely language. Mm. You know, in English, you say to a dog, that'll do. That's optional. You know, do I feel like that'll do? No, I don't. And then Welsh would say, duravor. I mean, that's, you know, you stop.
Yeah.
And a man who I used to admire, used to work several dogs at the same time, was coming back from a show, and I was staying in his house as a guest. And they came up with this trailer, and he lowered the back, and he said, in about three languages, go to your kennels. Hmm. Go to your kennels. And all the dogs went off. All went off on their own. But in the morning, I realised how clever that was, because when I walked around the farm, none of the kennels had doors on them. Mm. And none of the dogs came out.
No.
So he told them to go in their kennels. And their kennels had everything in, like the meat was in there, the water was in there, but they didn't come out until he told them to come out in all their languages. And I was impressed. Long answer, short question.
That's very, well, from my observations, that strikes me very much as a border collie thing. Because we recently were looking at a house to buy, and it had a big gate, and these two dogs, we pulled up on the outside, and these two collies were in the driveway, and they barked, but they stayed there very much. And we were talking to the owners, and he said, the one day I've gone off to work, and I've left the gates open by mistake, and when I've come home, the dogs are both just lying there, waiting. Now, we have a Labrador. That Labrador would be down in the village, knocking on everybody's door, any food, any fuss, you know.
Yeah.
That's very much a border collie thing.
It is a border collie thing. I've got another little dog here. I'll smile at the person as they come in the gate, and the minute they're in, past the point of no return, will bite their backside. That's also a collie thing, you know.
Yes. Lull you into a false sense.
Yeah, always, always. I guess mine would be different to somebody who's trying to train a dog to be a pet, because mine would be... my rationale would be, this dog has to earn my living, has to bring 1,000 sheep back from a bog in the middle of the night with a gale raging, and it has to save my life if necessary. I've had dogs that, when I'm trying to pull a ewe and a lamb out of a raging flood, has actually gripped the back of my trousers and helped me get out. So a sheepdog is, I can't really describe this, but much, much more than a pet dog. I've got a pet dog in the other room, little Sheltie, called Jem. And I love her, but I don't... It's not the same thing at all, because she's never going to share all these things with me, you know. And she... plus the fact she didn't obey me at all, you know, which is kind of annoying. You know?
Yes.
So it's a different thing. It was very interesting watching the Welsh National. All these taciturn Welsh shepherds went on, they ran their dog, the dog did fairly well, or whatever, and they all just looked at it, and I thought, what an unloving bunch of people these are. And I watched them. They went round the back of the refreshment tent. They kissed them to death. So they, it isn't a case the shepherd's hard. His expectations are high, but they actually love him just like somebody loves a pet dog. But there's something else. I've got a dog outside. He's called Bob, and he's 15, and he's become eccentric. I won't say he's lost his marbles, but it's close. He's become eccentric. And he can be as eccentric as he likes, because he made me look good a million times, and I owe him. And that kind of loyalty comes in. I've seen a shepherd who was in danger of being swept away in the Highlands throw his dog out of the stream, so at least he'd saved him.
Oh.
And then managed to get out himself. So it's a real bond, which I couldn't do justice to. Do all the shrugs come out?
I mean, the thing is that I find sad is they are an amazing breed of dog, and they have this, not just their physical energy, but this ability, you know, as you say, to be independent, to think, to go off and to work things out. And people have them as a pet.
Yeah.
And don't give them this stimulation.
If you want a settee eater, take a border collie and don't exercise it. Mm. If you want something that'll take all the plaster off one morning and an afternoon, the border collie's the dog to do it. That's not a distraction of the border collie, that's a real barb at the owners who haven't got a clue. And when people say to you, I notice when you say to them, you've got to feed its brain as much as you feed its body, they nod, but they don't hear.
No.
And they come back in 6 months' time with a ruined dog. I've got 1, 2, 3 dogs that all came back ruined. And the damage done will never be undone. Never be undone. And they don't realise that the dog is tough. It's actually tender too. It's a kind of mixture. So if you whack a border collie, physically whack a border collie on Monday, it will remember it for the rest of its life. Don't do it.
No.
You don't do it. I remember a little white dog called Cooney outside, and she chased after the sheep. And she was the best. I made a real mistake. She was the best sheepdog I'd ever seen in my life. But she hadn't learned one simple thing, which is leave them alone. So she chased the mothers who were expecting, round and round and round and round. I got so angry that I whacked her. Never whacked a sheep again. All I had to do was teach her not to do that.
Yeah.
That's all. And I think people make this mistake with all sorts of dogs. When you whack a dog with a newspaper, you're demonstrating you're thicker than the dog you're whacking. You know, it's not a solution. It's actually a cause of damage. And border collies are made to work. They're made to work. They're not made to lay by the fire and eat toffees. No. You know. They'll eat settees. I've seen them eat settees. They can eat the whole settee, wood frame, the knot, even the screws will disappear. Yeah.
It is sad, because I do think that sometimes the wrong people choose a border collie.
Yeah.
We had one turn up in our front garden. So I went out with a biscuit and the lead and sort of, and once I established he was friendly, you know, sort of got him on the lead, got him into that garden, phone number on the collar, so phoned the guy. Okay, I'll be there in 15 minutes. And this border collie, it was beautiful. And all he wanted to do, we got a dish of water, have a drink, and he spotted a tennis ball. And all he wanted to do was play fetch.
Yeah.
He didn't want a drink, he didn't want anything to eat, he just wanted to play.
Yeah.
You know, he was bored, wanted to play. And I expected, I mean, if one of my dogs went missing, I would be distraught. And, you know, I'd be so thankful to whoever, you know, found them. And I'm thinking, this guy's going to come in and he's going to thank us profusely and it's fine. He pulled up in a 4x4, and I said, oh, are you going to come and get him? I've got him. I opened the gate, and he said, just let him out. And he just opened the back door of the car, and the dog ran and got in, and he said, this is the 50th time I've picked him up this year. And you just think, what are you doing with a border collie then? You're just not unless you do something with him, you can't just stick it out in the back garden.
No, you can't. The Welsh are even worse, and no apologies to him, because they know they are. They put a dog that they say can't work tied to a barrel. It'll become a barrel dog for the rest of its life. And it'll be placed next to a road rather than the cattle grid. And its job will be to stop any sheep, because it'll just be able to reach across the road to the gate, stop any sheep going through the gatepost. And that's its whole life's experience. And what they're turning it into is a monster. They're teaching it to be a monster. Shepherds. You get bad shepherds and you get good shepherds. And you hear people say, I've had 4 dogs and they've all been bad. The answer is shepherd was bad in the first place. Or another man said, I've had 6 and they've all been wonderful, because they were, he was wonderful. So but a sheepdog isn't a slave. I think that's a mistake they make. nor is it a servant. It's your partner. It can do all the things you can't do, and you can do all the things it can't do. Yeah. And what a combination that is. But if you only have half of it working, it's like the left hand working on its own. It doesn't work. No. What do the Zen say? Sound of one hand clapping. Admirable, but impossible to try it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So it's a mistake.
Yeah. Mm. We came and attended one of your demonstrations.
Yeah.
And you gave some fascinating insights into some of the things that you asked the dogs to do. And one thing that fascinated me was the spinning.
Oh, you're spinning. Yeah. Well, they'll naturally spin because they're joyful. And they'll spin. Oh, well, let's start at the beginning. If you start with a sheepdog puppy, what you want it to be is as nutty as a fruitcake, preferably, because you can minimise the nuttiness, but you can't put the enthusiasm in. So you start it full of spirit, naughty, bad, terrible. And it'll spin if you tell it off sometimes, because it's like a release.
Yes,
you
know. Yeah.
I know he's not going to whack me, and I know he's just telling me off, but I can't stand it because I'm too proud, so I'll spin. And you turn it to your advantage, because I noticed once with sheep that I couldn't get them in the pen. Every time I made the dog spin, they jumped in the pen. So in the end, we taught all the dogs to spin. And it works wonderfully if you're trying to pull them back from the top of a cliff. If you can get the dog to the edge of the cliff and make him spin, they won't stay on the edge of the cliff, they'll all move inland.
Yeah.
So that was a good way of doing it. But it'll put sheep in a pen instantly. Because sheep, people always say sheep are daft, and sheep are not daft. They're the best animals in the whole wide world at being sheep. That's quite an achievement. There's a cartoon, isn't there, where there's two sheep standing by the M5, and they're watching this traffic jam go by. You know, all these people stuck nose to tail and all the rest of it, and they're saying, and they say sheep are stupid. You know? So that's a relative thing. So a sheep can sort of counter what it sees as a move. So they learn the instructions as well. If the dog moves to the left, the sheep might dummy to the right, and it can cope with mechanical movements. What it can't cope with is madness. And that breaks it down. It loses all its thinking powers, and it just says, I'm going to get somewhere safe, I'm going to jump in the pen, and you've won. But the judges hate it because it's not orthodox. You know, you mustn't do it. But if you're a shepherd working for money, who cares about orthodox? You know, you're getting paid for achieving the job.
Yeah.
So I use spinning a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of spinning. I've also taught all my dogs to sneer. So if you've got a Welsh sheep will run 20 yards if the dog just moves his paw a little tiny bit. So if you can control the sneer without the dog moving, you say the dog sneer, he sneers, the sheep will move 30 feet, say, and you say our bigger sneer will move them 40 feet. So you just do a lot of sneering. There was a dog down in Devon, I've never seen the light, and the man paid £5,000 for him. Brilliant dog. And then as he got old, arthritis set in really badly. And I watched this dog in the middle of a field move sheep all the way around a trials course, and he didn't move more than a yard.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it by leaning to the left, which sent them to the right, and by going like this, which sent them forwards, and so forth. The only bit he ran, well, he didn't run, he hobbled the last 10 yards, you know, just to make sure they're in the pen.
Yeah.
That's all.
Oh,
wow. So they can do it. It's by, the shepherds say it's by the movement. I don't think it's by the movement at all. I think it's by the eye. Concentration on the sheep, because thinking about it, a predator would look at a prey animal with a terrible glare, because that's what he's going to eat.
Yeah.
And he looks at the sheep the same way, and the sheep thinks it's about to be eaten.
Yeah.
You know, so it moves, you know, every time. That answered the question. I didn't go off then, did I?
No, that was
good.
they do have a stare, don't they?
Yes, you use it on them. The best way to punish a sheepdog is to put the full glare of both of your eyes into one of their eyes, and children should try it on their teachers because it works a treat. And you'll see whoever's receiving this pull over on that side, because it's like somebody putting two fingers on your forehead and pressing around that side. It actually hurts.
Mm.
And if you do it to a dog, you'll see it slowly go down on the ground with its head and it'll submit to you. But not a bitch. Not a bitch. Doesn't. No, it's true. I'm not just saying that for effect. If I did that to Polly, Polly would take my face off. Bitches are totally different. Dogs like step-by-step instruction manuals. It's like the book Men Don't Listen and Women Don't Read Maps. They're a bit like that. The females do everything on their own. Do the whole thing. I used to show Molly the sheep dip. She'd do everything thereafter. The only thing she might do is go the pretty way home, which she did do. The boys went, they'll go the most effective way home.
Yeah.
They're kind of channeled, but the girls often say, oh, I haven't been up on that ridge for a week or two, I'll take him round the ridge and through the woods. They'll do it beautifully, so you've got nothing to worry about. Mm.
But they do it their way.
They do it their way. Like Molly used to like bringing him down this lane and all the traffic came down. And I never broke her of that. And in the end, I used to let her go down the lane because she did that well anyway. But but it was always nerve-wracking, you know, who's going to come around the corner, that kind of thing. But the boys look at you, wait for the next instruction. It's like, Maureen always makes sure that I'm standing still before she tells me anything because she realises that I won't take it if I'm moving on the basis that I can't do two things at once.
Yes, oh yes.
Which is true, which is true. It's quite funny, the male and female argument there. I always say to her, no, I only do one thing at a time, but I do it wonderfully.
Yes, terrible. We've had
it. You have that
we've
argument.
We've had that.
Yeah. But she can do lots of things at once. I can't. While you're doing that, could you... and the other silly thing is that my favourite is when she says, would you like to? Well, no, I wouldn't.
No, yes.
Would you like to is a polite way of saying, if you don't do it, I'll kill you, isn't it?
See, I worked with nursery children. And you say, would you like to?
Would you like
say,
to?
No. Let me rephrase it then. I'll just do it.
Yes, do it. But we'd rather have someone say, do it.
Do it. One of the other things you mentioned in your demonstration was that if, with a, particularly with a young dog that hasn't experienced this, the sheep will try and squash him.
Yeah, that's what I mean about them not being daft. They'll walk down a fence line with the puppy on the outside of them, looking at him as though they're great friends, and just walking very, very slowly. Even their body language changes. I'm just strolling down here. I wouldn't hurt you. You have no need to worry about me. And as soon as they can injure the near the puppy into the corner of the field where it has no escape and there's a concrete post, they'll go at it like a, you know, thunderbolt. And I have seen puppies that never worked again. So I used to train all my dogs to evade sheep by evading me. I used to run at them in the field, you know, and make them evade. Quite roughly, run straight at them, you know. Prepared to run over them if necessary. Not in a vehicle, just me.
Yes.
And they quickly move, and then once they learnt that, when it happened with the sheep, they moved. They seemed to understand. Border collies, there's no lesson with a border collie that's ever wasted. And even though you might have done it 3 years ago, they'll remember it when it comes to the moment. I've noticed something else with border collies. They'll store up their revenge on you. They actually store up their revenge on you. I did something to a dog every morning. I made it work ducks, and it hated working ducks. And it took me a year to find out it hated working ducks. And it looked at me, and it bit the end of my stick, and it bit the end of my stick. I had that stick that used to be 5 foot tall, was about 2 foot long. And then one day, in front of the biggest audience of the lot, it waited till I was bending down, looking at the duck pen, and it gave me the biggest bat in the backside I've ever seen in my life. And the look said, you earned that. You know, you really did earn that. So I stopped her working ducks that day, and she started working sheep. And then she was lovely. But I'm sure she saved it. I'm sure she said, right.
Yeah.
You know, you insult me. I'm sure she had gone a pause and said, 1, 2, 3, that's 10 I owe you. Because she bit me on the backside, but she didn't look savage. It was more the look, you know, well.
Yeah.
You got your
comeuppance. You had that coming, yes.
Yeah. So they're different.
Yeah. And how many border collies do you own?
Have currently 14. It has been up to 20, I suppose. That's the most. When we used to run the breeding centre, we might have 60. But they were all being, other people's dogs being trained and going on and so forth. People keep saying, are you going to get any new dogs? And the answer is, 69, no. And the reason is, I said to God, please can I live 1 year longer than the last of my dogs? And if I got a new one, I'd be cheating. You'd have to keep me alive forever. So, no more. Well, that's the resolution. But I'll have to ask him for a change of conditions on the last one.
Renegotiate.
Yeah, renegotiate. But, 14 currently. And some of those are old. I've got Bob's 15, and there are several, a couple that are 12. And they suddenly lose interest in doing demonstrations, and the minute they lose interest, you never do them again. Yeah. But the sad thing is they all look lovingly at the kennel as you drive away in the car to take the others to a show. So it's kind of awful. And one old boy, Bob, I often take to shows just so he can experience the pleasure without the pain, because he likes sleeping in the caravan. And when we go into the caravan, you see all the dogs pile in. I make up this big double bed, and we just pile in. Last one in is a sissy. That's usually me. And then they all snuggle around. And in March, when you're doing a show, and everybody gets up in the morning and say, oh, I nearly died last night with a cold. You know, I didn't even notice it.
Mm.
So, but I think people regard you as filthy eccentric. But tough. I like it. That's what I do. You know, but I'm sure they do.
Oh,
I see people looking in disgust. They say, and where did the dog sleep? Looking round for extra accommodation, you know, like Trust in Forte next door or something.
Yeah.
Sleep with me.
Well, I've heard of, don't the, is it the Aborigines that say a three-dog night?
Yes. A three-dog, yes.
So, I mean, with at least six, seven.
Oh, yeah. But there's more to it than that. If we're working Saturday and we go Friday and we eat the same food Friday night, we sleep together, and we sleep again on Saturday, by Sunday they are so bonded that I can move them without even talking. You can just move them because they're saying, oh, I know, you know. I mean, none of these lessons are wasted. If you roll over in the night and scratch a border collie, you'll never find him in that silly position the next morning. He'll always move, but he'll apply it. He'll apply that logic. So if they're reading your body language as you sleep and turn and thrash about and so forth, they're going to read it even better the next day. It sounds silly, but it's the closeness will actually make the bond work better. With a border collie, don't know about another dog. It would with a spaniel. It would with a Labrador, most certainly. Yeah.
I say, can I use that as an excuse? But he's got to sleep on the bed, so I can train him better.
Well, yeah. Why not? At home, they don't sleep on the bed at all. They're not allowed to go anywhere near the bed. And we don't say, this is your settee, but we work a blind policy, which is pretend you haven't seen them, which means you never gave them permission, and that leaves you the right to say, get down. Because you never said get up.
Yes.
But if you say get up and then expect to say get down, forget it. It's not good.
Yeah.
So they've all got their own settees in the other room that are for them.
Yeah.
Really saggy settees that we've had like for 20 years. Like the one you're sitting on right now.
She's got a Bichon Frise puppy. We have a dog sofa, don't we? With a throw on it that I can just take up under the sofa. But the other sofa... is, you know, when my mother-in-law comes around, she's got to have a non-doggy sofa to sit on, so that's a non-doggy. And this little Bichon Frise, she gets a different thing. And today her thing was, I'm going to sit on the red settee, not the one with
the special one, yeah.
And I've thrown, I mean, not thrown, but I've turfed her off it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, 20 times? And, like, you put her onto that, no, you can't go on this, put her down. And she'll come round your back. I'm sitting there on the back, round your back, up to that end and lie down and go,
yeah.
I'm here. What are you going to do?
We've got, My daughter won a chair in a... She wins competitions. My daughter Helen does competitions. She wins. She has five holders a year and, you know, new car and all the rest of it. She wins all the time. And she gave us... she didn't give us, she sold us because this is my family already. So I bought it for about 200 quid. One of these relaxing chairs. You know, these lovely leather relaxing chairs. Oh, yeah. Well, Susie always jumps in that. But applying a little bit of psychology... She's not jumping on that because it's an easy chair and it's expensive, it's made of leather, she's going to kill it. She's jumping on it because I sit in it and she's bonding with me, and I understand that. So I look the other way when it happens, but my wife allows her about an hour. Before she becomes too entrenched, she'll say, get down. But we didn't say get up, so that's all right. That's all right. Yeah. But if you say get up, I'm afraid you're doomed for the rest of your life.
Well, it's funny because Buddy wasn't allowed up to begin with. And then I used to say, when we move, because we've been moving for a long time, when we move, can I have a sofa that the dog can go on? And I want to cuddle my dog. So we've put this cover on, but quite late on in Buddy's life. I suppose he was a good three, wasn't he? But this puppy has come in and always known she can get onto this sofa seat.
Yeah.
And so she's... But she hasn't gone onto that one for weeks and weeks and weeks, and then she just goes, right, I'm getting on that one today.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose... I've always maintained that they'll know the difference between the red sofa and the blue one. I don't know if that's true. I suppose their logic, if they're really clever dogs, if I'm allowed to go on that one, I'm allowed to go on that one.
Yeah.
But for instance, they never, ever try and take food from your plate. I've always had a real rule in this house, that is, I don't eat your dinner, and I don't expect you to attempt to eat mine, so really ferocious over there. But... a snarl, you know, on the edge of the table, just real snarl. I'm going to kill you, snarl. And that's enough. They don't do it.
Yeah.
You can go as far as you like. in so much as if you're training a farmer's dog, he'd give you 12 weeks to train the dog, and he'd say, okay, in 12 weeks I can get 6 commands. But with my dogs, they don't get into a ring until they've trained for 3 or 4 years. And the weakness with my method is, by the time they're really good, they've started to age. So seldom will you see a very young dog. I mean, Polly was running around doing all those tricks on whenever it was when you came to the dog show. And this evening, I said to my wife, because she'd lost 3 teeth this week, Polly, how old's Polly? And she said 9. Mm. And that was a real blow to me. No, I'm really upset that she's 9, because I think her was 2.
Yeah.
And I say to all these people in the dog show, this young dog, and well, of course they know what a young dog looks like. They're all saying it's not a young dog. but it takes longer. But you get maybe 136 commands in, which is a lot. And if they have a stroke, they'll forget every one of those 136 commands overnight. And none of them mean anything to them anymore. If they have a stroke in the night, or even a minor one, they suffer from dementia just like people do. I don't think people realise that.
No.
That your dog suffers from dementia, you know. And what's the other one where you forget everything?
yes.
And that.
Alzheimer's.
Yes.
Really?
I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't be classified as Alzheimer's, but it is Alzheimer's. I remember nothing that I've ever done before. I don't know who I am, and I don't know where I'm going. And I noticed, too, that when that happens, the younger dogs in our pack, because ours are Britain, use much more like a pack, will nurture that older dog. And do lots of help it to do the functional things.
Yeah.
You know, Polly will stay near her dad if he looks as though he's in danger, and Barney will bring her dad back because he's deaf, he won't hear me. So he'll actually turn him. I watch him turn him in the fields and bring him back. He's a big dog, Barney, so I'll be behind him pushing him a bit until he comes back. But Bob, of course, is intelligent enough to know that he's being taken back.
Yeah.
So, nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
I know, but it is. I'm always chuffed when I see that, because they say in the Christian religion there's no room for animals, you know. I mean, animals are eaten, sacrificed, take the first lamb, the newly born, this, that and the other, and they won't have it. Then animals go to heaven, and I reckon there'll be more animals in heaven than there will people. I'm convinced they go to heaven, but it's not because of anything it says in the Bible. It's just that if I love my sheepdogs that much and I'm not capable of great love, how much does he love them? So they'll go there. There's no fear about that. And there was I had a really strange experience. I'll tell you about Wing. I buried Wing, and I love Wing. He's in that picture there, the one in the front. I loved him to bits. He could count in fractions. But he was the naughtiest dog I ever saw. For the first 10 years, he ran away. And I spent my life picking him up from the traffic lights in Biddeford and you name it, everywhere. But in the last 3 years, he became the best dog I've ever seen in my life. And he got real practical nastiness. It's like he's too long to go in the hole. Because nobody ever digs a hole big enough. And it was really upsetting. And I went up to the bathroom afterwards, allegedly to wash my hands, but it really wasn't. It was to be on my own. And I felt him nudge me upstairs. I just buried him. And I thought, oh, this is a vicar, wishful thinking. Because you get really cynical about this and say, no, I mustn't put anything on anything if it isn't truly there.
Yeah.
And then I thought, no. And I remember saying out loud, no. And then he poked me. And then went round me about 3 or 4 times hard. And I still didn't say that. I came downstairs. My wife was standing at the kitchen door down there. She said, which dog did you take up with you? And I said, why do you ask? And she said, well, I saw one go, but I couldn't see who it was.
Wow.
Well, there are. So do dogs go to heaven? Yeah. Oh, yes, they do. It's quite safe, yeah. So they do. Yeah. They do.
Oh.
Not only does Graham train and work his dogs, he is a talented artist and writer, and is also the vicar of not just one, but 2 churches. To find out more, you can go to Graham's website, www.simssheepdogs.co.uk. There are several photos of Graham and some of his dogs on the Dogcast website. We filmed Graham's display, and hope soon to have that fascinating footage available too. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Kate.
And I'm Nick. A strange new canine behaviour has been observed, that of apparent canine suicide. Animal behaviourist Dr. David Sands has been investigating this phenomenon, studying a bridge in Scotland that at least 50 dogs have jumped from. After studying the Scottish bridge, along with other cases, Dr. Sands has a warning for dog owners. He His theory is that when humans peer over the side of a bridge, dogs are not always aware of the potential danger of falling, due to their eyesight being attuned to movement, while not being so good at depth perception. At the same time, dogs are intrigued to find out what their people are looking at. The safest course of action, according to Dr. Sands, is to keep your dog on a lead.
When Ray Trush Jr. and Lisa LaGrassa recently went on a fishing trip in Key Largo, Florida, they only made one catch all day, a Cairn Terrier called Tigger. Poor Tigger had fallen from his owner, Diane Beckman's boat. When Tigger was found to be missing, Diane and husband Richard spent hours trawling back and forth, eventually going home distraught. After trying unsuccessfully to phone Diane and Richard, Ray and Lisa decided to take their unusual catch to the Upper Keys Animal Shelter, where Tigger was later reunited with his people. Diane says that she will make sure Tigger is wearing a life jacket in future, and Ray and Lisa have a great fisherman's story.
In Muskvale, Australia, two dogs helped save a man's life. While out exercising with his young greyhound, a jogger got lost in bushland. A police search was launched, but as night fell, bringing the temperature down, the lost man cuddled his dog for warmth. After several hours searching, it was police dog Salem who finally located the lost pair, and, with the temperature down to 2 degrees centigrade, we're sure both man and dog were glad to get somewhere warm.
And finally, we have a Cocker Spaniel with the unusual addiction. Well, when the Mersch family moved house, Spaniel Lady investigated the garden pond with enthusiasm. But when Lady began exhibiting strange behaviour, the family observed her and discovered that she was licking the toads in the pond.
So has she been reading too many fairy tales and was hoping to find her prince?
Well, no. Apparently, Lady was under the influence of the hallucinogenic effects of the fluids on the toad's back, causing her to become confused and uncoordinated. With the support of her family and the wisdom of age, gradually, Lady's enthusiasm for the toads has lessened.
Well, let's hope this is a warning to any dogs listening. Please don't try this at home. Goodbye.
Have you heard of the extremely talented dog, Skid Boot? The story of Skid Boot and his owner, David Hartwig, is a touching and an amazing one. This pair formed a bond that has enabled David to bring out Skid Boot's abilities and skills, and to see the two of them together is inspiring. You can see footage of their story on iambored.com. There's a link to this on the Dogcast site. And while I absolutely recommend you go and see it, be warned, I cried at it, so maybe have a tissue handy. You can also find out more about this incredible partnership at www.skidboot.com. One of the things that struck me about David Hartwig is his humility and humour. He has enabled his dog to do a huge variety of complicated tasks, and he handles Skid Boot with a great flair for entertaining. But he is grateful, not big-headed. In the video, you'll see that Skid Boot now has health problems, and David says that whatever happens, he will be there for his dog. I guess at the end of the day, he just loves his dog, like the rest of us. And if you do love dogs, you'll love Skid Boot too. Well, you love your dog, but how much do you love Dogcast Radio? We really value your feedback, and we try to respond to it so that we can make Dogcast the show you really want. You can help us by clicking on the survey button on the Dogcast site, which is at the end of every episode page, and take a few minutes to fill it out. Any suggestions you care to send us by email would be great too. One recent idea from a listener was that we should change to more upbeat music. So tell us what you think about that. Help us make Dogcast the show you want. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dog Cast Radio. That's all one word, Dog Cast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
How do dogs turn off the VCR? By hitting the pause button.